today on Annenberg Radio News.
The amount of the check that got me arrested was $146.16.
As the three strikes law comes up for debate, we meet a woman whose third strike came for writing a bad check. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, October 16th, 2012. I'm Josh Wu. Mayor Villaraigosa's plan to create a photo ID card for undocumented immigrants cleared its first hurdle today. Melissa Runnels reports on the vote to approve the Universal City Services Card.
The city's Arts, Parks, Health, and Aging Committee approved the plan on a unanimous vote. It would expand city library cards to function as photo ID cards for anyone who can prove residency. They could also be used as prepaid ATM cards. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa originated the plan to help those who don't, for whatever reason, have access to traditional banking. Immigration rights activists say the card would help integrate immigrants into the life of the city and help those who have been gouged at check-cashing companies. But opponents say it will primarily benefit undocumented immigrants. Ira Melman is with the Federation of Immigration Reform.
Even if the city officials don't necessarily agree with U.S. immigration policy, it should not be the place of a city government to impede federal immigration enforcement and facilitate people living in the country illegally.
The plan is similar to programs in San Francisco and Oakland. The committee's action sends the plan to the full city council. If approved there, the city will send out a request for bids to run the program. Phoebe Unterman, Annenberg Radio News.
The LA County Board of Supervisors voted today to hire a monitor to oversee changes at county jails in the months ahead. The board proposed 63 reforms to Sheriff Lee Baca to address allegations of deputy misconduct in his jail system. Sheriff Baca told the supervisor today that he plans to implement all of their reforms, saying, quote, "I couldn't have written them better myself." Two competing propositions on next month's ballot would raise funds for education in California. Propositions 30 and 38 would increase taxes and support California's public school system. Proposition 30 is Governor Jerry Brown's plan, and today he started a tour of college campuses to drum up support for the initiative. Kate Boza was at UCLA, where the governor started his tour.
Governor Brown began his tour supporting Prop 30 Tuesday, with just 3 weeks until the upcoming election. Speaking to a small crowd of students and local union leaders, the governor outlined the importance Prop 30 will have to the future of California public schools.
Proposition 30 is an opportunity for the people themselves not only to fix California, but to send a message to the rest of the country that we as a people can invest together in our schools and our community colleges and in the great University of California.
Brown referenced recent polls which allegedly indicate increased support for the ballot measure. He also emphasized the importance of participating in the upcoming election.
In some states, they're making it harder to vote. In California, we're making it easier. So let's take advantage of that.
Proposition 30 centers on a proposed raise in taxes, executed two ways: a four-year quarter-cent increase to the state sales tax, and a seven-year increase on earnings over $250,000. The income generated by these taxes will be funneled into a special fund exclusively for public schools. It's a sacrifice, says Governor Brown, that's essential for the growth of California.
The question is, do we want to disinvest in our schools? It's a downward spiral. We're cannibalizing our schooling and our future.
Not all members of the small crowd gathered for today's rally were energized by the governor's message. Opponents to Proposition 30 suggest the measure will do little to fix the problems at the heart of California's budget crisis: overspending and lack of accountability. William Shakar, a sophomore pre-med student at UCLA, is one of those opponents. He fears the initiative will have a direct impact on his family.
It's going to be a massive tax hike on small business, and my dad is a small business owner, and he's one more month from running in the red and having to shut down.
When asked about student fears surrounding the 20% tuition hike enacted if Prop 30 fails, Shakar offers little sympathy to his fellow Bruins.
They voted for this. It was their choice. They had a choice 2 years ago, and they have to live with the ramifications of their political decision.
At the conclusion of his speech, Brown offered strong words for those unsure about the impact of Prop 30 on their lives.
It's a simple yes or no vote, and for your sake, for the future's sake for all of California. Vote yes on Proposition 30. Let's go. Let's win.
Kat Boza, Annenberg Radio News.
Measure J on the November ballot is getting support from city leaders and the LA Times. The measure would extend the tax increase that voters approved 4 years ago for transit projects. But members of the Bus Riders Union, Beverly Hills Unified School District, and the Congress of Racial Equality all say no to Measure J. Melissa Runnels reports.
If Measure J passes, it would accelerate more than 15 MTA projects, improving highways and creating jobs. But many community leaders and organizations don't believe it will benefit their neighborhoods at all. The measure would extend the half-a-cent county sales tax until 2069 and generate $90 million for the MTA. But Sunyoung Yang of the Bus Riders Union sees Measure J as a $90 million tax that won't even improve the bus system she depends on.
MTA has no plans to actually expand bus service, and in fact, they're planning to raise fares and cut bus service.
Yang also believes the MTA failed to deliver on promises for the recent rail expansion.
The rail lines that they've built out so far did not deliver half of the ridership that it promised. When you have a $1 billion per mile price tag, that means we should get ridership like we see in Seoul, Korea, and other metropolises that have not a few thousand riders, but millions of riders, right?
The rail expansion is also a touchy subject for Damian Goodman of the Crenshaw Coalition, who says the MTA simply cannot be trusted.
This is not an agency that plans well. This is not an agency that responds to community concerns.
Measure J would extend a similar measure, Measure R, from 2008. And Goodman believes that the MTA's record since then speaks for itself.
We passed Measure R just 4 years ago, and in that period of time, they've ignored the concerns of a cross-section of community groups from Boyle Heights to Baldwin Hills to Crenshaw to the Bus Riders Union.
However, it's difficult to ignore the success of Measure R. MTA completed the extension of the Orange Line in 3 years and also started two light rail projects. And if Measure J is approved, the 15 projects already in the works won't get stuck in neutral. The tax extension could jumpstart work on projects like the West Side Subway, improvements to the 5, 405, and 110 freeways, and more soundwall construction. Californians just have to vote to raise their taxes. Again. Melissa Runnels, Annenberg Radio News.
Weather. Tonight will be pleasantly cool with a low of 64 degrees and a light breeze. But for the next 2 days, it's high summer all over again. We'll see highs in the lower 90s and lots of sunshine. Nighttime will bring some relief in cooler temperatures with lows around 66. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we talk to author David Troyer about the role of language in keeping Native American cultures alive. In a few short weeks, California voters will choose whether or not to amend California's tough-on-crime three-strikes law with Proposition 36. Reporter Molly Gray took a look at the law's long, controversial history and why now might be the time it finally changes.
Since 1994, California's three-strikes law has put thousands of repeat offenders behind bars for life. The law was designed to stop violent criminals. But over the years, it has also ensnared people like Kelly Turner.
My father died of cancer in 1996. Unbeknownst to me at that time, that was a trigger for me.
Before three strikes, Turner was convicted twice of robbery and resolved to quit serious crime. But in 1997, she was sentenced to life in prison. Her third strike? Forgery.
The amount of the check that got me arrested was $146.16.
The law became notorious for cases like these. So notorious, even rap icon Ice Cube wrote it in a song. Can I stay out the pen when it's 1, 2, 3 strikes you win? 1, 2, 3 strikes you win. Many attempts to repeal or amend three strikes have failed when brought to public vote. Campaigns against those propositions centered on fear of criminals and the necessity to keep them off our streets. but it looks like Proposition 36 on November's ballot could break the spell. 75% of people say they plan on passing the proposition, according to a poll done by Pepperdine University's School of Public Policy. So what's the difference? As with most things in life, it all boils down to money. Estimates show that California could save up to $70 million a year with the proposed changes. With today's economic climate and state budget woes, that's an appealing number. To see why, I caught up with Professor Robert Nash Parker at UC Riverside. He's been against three strikes since the beginning.
And it becomes this, buffet of all-you-could-eat imprisonment.
Crime dropped nearly 70% from 1994 to 2006, but Parker isn't convinced that three strikes is responsible. A similar drop in crime was seen in all states across the country, regardless of the type of penal laws in place. Prop 36 revises the law to impose life sentences only when a defendant's third felony is a violent one.
If you were to drop the less serious offenders from qualifying for three strikes, you could reduce the potential future prison population by at least 40%.
But supporters of the current system aren't so sure the extra cash is worth weakening the law.
People got the message that if they committed a new felony, they were facing an indeterminate life term.
That was Tom Toller, a researcher for the California District Attorneys Association, which opposes Proposition 36. He says it will take away the discretion reserved for prosecutors and judges who decide whether to charge three strikes or not.
And so there are already defendants who have benefited from leniency, and the opposite side of that argument is that the ones who have not, clearly judges and district attorneys have felt an indeterminate life sentence was appropriate.
Our check forger Turner wasn't shown much mercy. She served 13 years of her life sentence before eventually being released on a technicality. Thousands more haven't been so lucky.
I know who they are on the inside, and I know that their criminal behavior is beyond them, is behind them.
Turner says she hopes that with Prop 36, others will get the same second chance she received. Molly Gray, Annenberg Radio News.
Among those tuning in to the second presidential debate tonight will be the growing population of Latino registered voters. While Barack Obama still holds a 3-1 lead over Mitt Romney among Latinos, their support of the president dropped 5% after the first debate. A Pew Hispanic report found that 3/4 of Latinos see debate performance as an important factor in their voting choice. Retired attorney and activist Don Jones of Eagle Rock is hosting a debate viewing event for Latinos tonight in El Sereno.
We're an oral culture. We like to hear the person speak. That's why for us the debate is perhaps different. We'll be looking to gauge the emotional content, whether or not we really trust and believe them.
The town hall-style debate airs tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific time. Native American reservations are often characterized by outdated and tragic cliches. Executive producer Aaron Schrank spoke with an author who offers a different narrative.
I'm speaking today with David Troyer, a USC English professor and author who's written several novels about Native American life. His latest is a work of nonfiction called Res Life, An Indian's Journey Through Reservation Life. David is a member of the Ojibwe of northern Minnesota and grew up on Leech Lake Reservation there. David, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with what brought you to write this work of nonfiction, Res Life, and what made you decide to approach the topic through a personal lens. Did you feel that the perception of reservation life created by other stories out there, both fiction and nonfiction, didn't reflect what you've experienced?
Yeah, I wanted to write a book that got behind the received iconography. I wanted to write a book that got behind and beyond the usual stereotypes of feathers and paint on one hand and of poverty and alcoholism and despair on the other. And in between the romantic and the tragic, there's a whole range of life. I lived it growing up. Lots of people continue to live complex, interesting, complicated lives, and that's where I wanted to go. That to me as a writer was the place where writing happens.
I read an interesting passage from Res Life where you and your colleagues are out on a lake spearfishing for walleye, speaking Ojibwe to one another, doing something you note that your people have been doing for centuries. And you write that as you're spearing and speaking Ojibwe on this foggy night, you can clearly hear the sound of David Letterman's top 10 list coming from a television at one of these resort homes along the lake. I thought it was an interesting juxtaposition, and I wondered, what do moments like that one say about the staying power of culture in your mind?
Well, you know, I mean, one of the ideas that people have about Native folk is that we live in some faraway land lost in the mists of time, you know, well away from the rest of America. And we do things which are at odds with or different from the things that the rest of America are doing. And that's not the case. You know, we're as much in the mix as anyone else, if not more so in some ways. And so to me, that moment was really kind of beautiful in its own way. That scene kind of brought everything together.
I heard you in another interview talking about inward activism. Instead of Native Americans urging those outside the reservation to pay attention to them, this new activism is members of Indian communities urging one another to preserve their culture. Tell me about this shift, if it is a shift, and why it's significant.
You know, before, sort of on the tail end of the civil rights movement and, you know, up through the 1970s, activism in Indian country, and today too in many ways, was very much directed outward. We want to show you what's being done to us, and we want this to stop, and we need it to stop. And in the name of fairness and, you know, sort of our constitutional rights and sort of morality and so on. But a different kind of activism has emerged alongside of it and kind of eclipsed it in some ways, which is this sort of language and culture-based activism where tribal members are, you know, of the opinion that, you know what, America tried its best to take all this stuff away and failed. To eradicate our languages, to acculturate us, and why should we look to them to rectify the problem? And so let's fix it ourselves and let's look to ourselves. So you see language immersion programs springing up in tribes all over the country, not just mine, the Ojibwe, but in Blackfeet country, Navajo, all over the place, Cherokee.
And why is language so essential to culture?
There are a lot of things that go into making up a culture, right? Where you're from and who your family is, kinship, class, geography, religion, all these things come together to make up culture. And language is in that mix as well, and it's one of the most important parts of it. It shapes your relationships with the world around you. It shapes your relationships with the people around you. You know, the word for bear in Ojibwe is mukwa, which a lot of people think etymologically is related to the word for makuk, which means box. And it kind of describes how black bears will den up and hibernate for the winter. They box themselves up. At some level, that linguistic association is going to bring with it, you know, sort of cultural associations, and you're going to understand something about the ecology even of bears just by knowing that word.
David Troyer will be hosting a book discussion and signing next Tuesday at USC. For his book, Res Life, An Indian's Journey Through Reservation Life. For more information on that event, please check out annenbergradio.org.
Now we check in with Juliana Ruiz to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thank you. So, Los Angeles is known for its abundance of billboards, but are they really wanted? The city voted 11-3 today to study how much money companies are making off these billboards. Watch ATVN tonight to learn more as the billboard battle heats up. Voters will be deciding on Proposition 36 in the upcoming election, which would revise the law limiting third-strike felonies to serious or violent crimes only. ATVN has more on the story tonight. We went around campus today asking students what matters most to them in the upcoming election. Tune in tonight to find out what they said.
That's it for this TV News. Evan Budrovich, Emmanuel Martinez, Phoebe Unterman, Timothy Beckworth, and Sam Weiser. Melissa Runnels is our producer, and our executive producer is Aaron Schrank. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Josh Wu.